The City Council Org Committee, Monthly Org Committee to order. Welcome, folks. It's wonderful to have, well, the Star and Tribune in the room and our interim director and Jessica. It's awesome. Thanks, everybody. We have a few items on our agenda today. We'll be moving items around to accommodate just schedules of appearance. So I think what we'll take first is the Neighborhood Development Fund. And Holly is going to walk us through the newly created Neighborhood Development Fund that's part of the 2022 budget process. I think we are all aware that this program is kind of riffs off of the year-round STAR program, which was many years ago was a funded program. It was a program that didn't have a dedicated source of funding, and it really was funded on, you know, maybe above and beyond sales tax, or perhaps a project that didn't go through, and then it would be allocated out to the wards to use for year-round STAR projects. We basically refunded this program with a more diverse funding source, which should allow us to have some flexibility in what sort of loans and grants we do. But the idea was to be able to do these closer to the ward level and to support the PED's work. We hear a lot of there's a lot of funds that aren't getting out the door, and we're kind of putting our money where our mouth is and saying we can help get this money out the door because we're closer to our ward communities and we know where the needs are. So we're going to be put to the test this year, but Holly will walk us through what is some of the details around the Neighborhood Development Fund and recognizing that we're not fully cooked and not ready to launch it yet, but we're getting there. And this is a good opportunity for folks to ask questions and also perhaps encourage some different guidelines or recommendations than we have currently in place. So, Holly.
All right. Thank you, Council President Brenlow and Council members. Good to be here. I will direct you to, there's a PowerPoint presentation in front of you, the very last page. I provide a very high-level overview of the Neighborhood Development Fund.
Holly, and I'm just going to remind people that they might need to turn their mic on for it to work.
Okay.
Is yours on?
Yeah.
Okay.
I believe so.
Yep.
So the Neighborhood Development Fund I have at a top-level overview is an annual investment in neighborhood small businesses to expand business success, equality, quality job opportunities, grow and expand the tax base, and ultimately strengthen our neighborhoods and communities. As Council President Brenmoan said, this is a combination of sales tax revenue that comes from, when we think about at the budget time, we talk about sales tax in different buckets, and that includes Neighborhood STAR, the River Center, and economic development. So this is a combination of Neighborhood STAR and economic development funding. In the past year, 2021, our sales tax did come in better than expected, so we were able to program that above sales tax into this year's program. So that is that will be dependent each year on the budget. However, this also combines economic development fund money that used to be called commercial vitality zone funding, and that is an annual programmed budget investment that would be ongoing in this program. The management of this fund will be Planning and Economic Development Department, and so we are working with them to establish this process, and as we mentioned, it's going to be similar to what we know as the year-round STAR process. So people can apply for this funding throughout the year. There'll be an application process. We're working out some of the details if they can apply for the capital funding and the economic development funding at one time, or if they need to be separate for just accounting purposes. I have some ideas that I'll be working with the deputy director and PED to see if process-wise we can make it all one application. I think that would be ideal for people applying.
Yeah.
And then, so there is a current year-round application process, so that just needs to be updated. And then when we get to the budget amount, there will be $200,000 per ward office. That breaks down how the funding broke out, $95,000 for capital, and then $105,000 roughly for economic development projects. And then the year-round STAR that you currently have, you have a balance right now. And each ward office utilizes that and has different amounts in it. That will roll forward into this program.
Great. Wow. I'm not used to looking at the table anymore. Okay, let's start with Ms. Jalali and then Ms. Anker.
Thank you. So my clarifying question, and make sure I heard correctly, is that each ward office from the Neighborhood Development Fund will get $95,000 for capital projects, and then $105,000 that goes toward kind of the more flexible STAR funding, like labor costs of a project, stuff that's hard to get compensated right now under the current STAR, and that's the $200,000 that we each get. That's the breakdown. And then whatever our existing STAR budget was just goes on top of that, basically, and that's the apportion. Okay, cool. I just needed to do one playback. Okay.
Yep, and I think the other piece is that we know that annually the more flexible economic development dollars are, I don't want to say guaranteed because every budget is a battle, but are more guaranteed. So the flexible dollars we will retain from a year-to-year basis, and then the STAR dollars will be more based on, you know, unfinished projects or a budget above and beyond what was expected in that budget year. So, yep, you got it. Ms. Anker.
Thanks, Council President. And similar question just on the logistics. I'm super excited about this. I think the flexibility in particular to do beyond more than capital is going to be huge. And I think council members have proven that we're able to get those dollars out the door really quickly. And often, I know many of us are out of dollars by the end of the year, which is a good place to be. But in terms of the flexible dollars, I just want to confirm, Holly, those can be used for capital, right? It's just that they don't have to be.
Correct.
So you can spend your full $200,000 on capital, but $100,000 can also be used for operating or something else.
Council President Brennan, Council Member Naker, yes, that is correct. And as I'm pulling together some of those details, and we'll be providing examples and working with PED and really taking what has been completed in the past. So like rehabbing or construction of property would be something that would be an economic development event as well.
I think one of the advantages also of having a more of a localized neighborhood development fund is that all of our wards are different. And so I know, like in Councilmember Jalali's ward, there's a lot of work on Midway and rebuilding Midway and also just investment along the Green Line. And I think that you will have more competing interests that are going to automatically know to come to make those requests. I'm knowing my own ward is a place where we literally will have to go door to door to door to door with people who speak many different languages and talk to folks in person to get them to even consider applying. So the application process may be different for each ward, and I think that's part of why we wanted this flexibility. Clearly we'll be consistent in what the rules are around them, but if I put out an open bid for my neighborhood development stuff money, I might not get any applications, whereas I think Ward 2 and Ward 4 may have a real stiff competition. So I think that this is really great because it allows us to, understand how things need to get out the door in our ward. So I'm excited about that. I know that for some of us, it means more work getting the dollars out the door, but I think that those one-on-one conversations are very meaningful, especially when we're talking to these smaller mom-and-pop orgs. And I will just also add that one of the discussion points yesterday was, and I think I'm throwing this out there for people to just think about, is that, when we were using our COPP dollars differently, one of the challenges was that the cost of administering small dollar figure grants exceeded the actual value of the grant itself. The staff time that went into those, the administration of those, the follow-up, the tracking. So we may need to set a lower limit on these grant funds. And the other thing that we challenge PED to consider is, can we increase the threshold for certain reporting requirements? So, like, if a grant is below, right now I think the limit, Holly, you said was $2,500, it's a low limit for certain reporting requirements. but maybe that limit needs to go up. I don't know when those limits were set, so that some smaller grants could be done more efficiently, but also using technology, and maybe there are some ways to figure out how to, instead of just saying it's too small of a grant, it costs too much to administer, figure out how to administer it more cheaply. So we're going to work on both sides of that. So I know, for example, again, in my ward, sometimes people just need $5,000, and it doesn't seem like much, but for them, that $5,000 is that piece of machinery they need to get their business off the ground, and that's where they need the dough. So, good hand up.
Yeah, I was just to kind of, I guess I'm thinking out loud of the everyday application of this. Like, we were working on spending our year-round star as an office, and one of the requests we got was that the neighborhood council was working with a group of seniors at Seal High Rise, which is like public housing at Raymond and Territorial, and it's also like a one of the buildings that has one of the most units of like disability accessible dwellings for people to live in. And they were doing this big like street art project that was meant to improve pedestrian safety, help people get access to the neighborhood businesses along there. And basically they had like benches and then a street mural, and the star funds paid for literally the brick and mortar, which is like, here's the bench. But like a lot of the costs were things that actually STAR can't reimburse because it's not a capital improvement. And so I'm just trying to think of like the value of a fund like this, because what we could have done instead is invested in and supported the local artists that helped design it, supported the seniors with the project management parts of it. Like, there's a lot of supplies and materials that go into that, but that wouldn't get reimbursed, kind of on and on. And, you know, that's one thing, but there's also like mural preservation, and like there's a lot of sort of arts preservation stuff in the Midway that is coming up now with the changes and things you were talking about. And I appreciate that we have this source, and it is forward thinking and very useful, because a lot of neighborhood needs are not going to just be brick and mortar. They're going to be kind of more than that to make projects happen. And I can just already see the value for my constituents. So this is a good update, and I'm excited. And I'm getting ready to spend it all, though.
Well, I mean, I said this in the very beginning of the conversation, but I think that, you know, we're going to have to prove up at the end of the year and show that we were able to get those funds out the door. I know some of our ward year-round STAR dollars, different council offices might save some to fund a larger project or spend more on littler projects. But I think on this one, to make the case to continue funding it, the more we can get out the door and into the businesses in our wards, the more we can make the case that $200,000 is money well spent and not money sitting in a dragon pile in a cave. And I think I have confidence that we will get that dough out the door. Ms. Snicker.
Two questions. Just in terms of recipients, they have to be private businesses, can't be nonprofits, can't be district councils. Just want to check on eligibility. And then timeline, to your point, Council President, I'm sort of like my colleague, Councilmember Jalali, raring to go and want to know, you know, when we're going to be able to start talking about this and getting the money out.
Council President Brenmo and Councilmember Naker, I'm just looking. I will confirm. I believe eligible projects include nonprofits and small businesses within St. Paul. And I think there's some also latitude in how we design that. Eligible applicants include public, private, or nonprofit entities located or doing business in St. Paul, and that's from the Community Vitality Fund. So I guess my proposal would be to carry that forward. So I'm open to feedback if that's not the intent.
So public, private, and nonprofit.
Nonprofit, yeah.
Yeah, okay.
And then as far as moving this program forward, I believe the intent or the goal would be March 1st is what I heard yesterday, and so that gives PED and myself some time to get the application reformatted and then make sure the guidelines are laid out, and then also establish who in PED is doing the work to help us move this forward.
Right. Does that mean March 1st, where we could get an application and just start doing stuff? Okay, just making sure I understood. Thank you.
Yeah.
I think we'll want to do like a launch of the fund,
yeah.
you know, in advance of that, and hopefully give council ward offices time to set up what their process is going to look like in that regard. But Ms. Inker, did you have another? No. All right. More? Yes, Ms. Yang.
Oh, thank you. For money in the year-round STAR fund, like, is that still available for us to use, too? Okay.
It will become part of this fund.
Okay, gotcha.
So it would be a capital. It'll be included in your capital balance.
Okay, thank you.
Yep. So whatever portion, that's a good question. It was asked yesterday, actually, by PED, if we were going to put it all back in the pot and reshuffle it out, and I thought there'd be some enraged council members if we did that, since I have, like, $1. I think you have like $1.
Yeah.
Yeah. And some have more like $300. But we know that some of those projects are just in the queue and will be coming down. So so those will roll over and be on the half cent sales tax STAR, neighborhood STAR side. Ms. Prince.
And just one other question, and I believe I know the answer, but just to clarify, if a project comes in through PED that looks like a good recipient for this money, the assumption is that we'll all be working together on it, that it isn't solely up to each of our offices to initiate the project, that it could come in through many doorways at the city, and that funding would be available in our wards. You know, I will say that the year-round STAR funding has allowed us to do some really terrific projects in Ward 7 and projects that otherwise may not have business owners or nonprofits that may not have been aware that resource was available, and when they have been able to access it, we've been able to do some great projects in the ward that have really made a lasting difference. So I'm very excited about the expansion of the program.
And I think one of the advantages that's, Holly, Mia, I think you covered this, but STAR, Neighborhood STAR, is a once-a-year program. And so, you know, PED pushes projects to go to apply in the Neighborhood STAR program for this once-a-year funding. But a lot of projects pop up between when that funding goes out the door and when the next round is. So the year-round model that the council board offices use has been really wonderful when projects pop up in between regular STAR. So I think we all obviously want to push bigger projects through the STAR program, but we have a flexibility when something comes up. If someone's trying to build out their coffee shop, they're starting in July, they really can't wait till the following June to get some STAR support. So the kind of ongoing monthly STAR reviews, and then we will get the STAR board will have an opportunity to review the project. They'll give us their recommendations, and then the council will vote on the release of those funds to any particular project. And that is currently the process for year-round STAR, and we'll just continue that forward into this neighborhood development, the newly dubbed neighborhood development fund that's similar to your answer. Okay, do we have any other questions? I think just a lot of enthusiasm about this and a great opportunity for us to get into corners of our neighborhoods that haven't been reached, so it's exciting. So Ms. Yang, we're just waiting for our city attorney off to show up on item number one. So I think what we'll do is we could, I suppose, because I'm expecting her any minute, maybe we should update on, well, what, do you want to start on the city council work plan?
I can start on, we'll just go backwards. How about ward budgets? Just that
oh,
shouldn't
great.
Take too long.
Great. Yep, wonderful.
Okay, so let's see. Right, the page, the second to the last page in the PowerPoint just is a reminder about ward budgets. And so the city council has an operations budget that supports our salary and operating needs, which support our office. So training, postage, salary, miscellaneous normal expenses that run any office. And so each ward office is allocated out of that full $3.8 million, $8,000 for their own individual needs. This amount has been the same. I believe this is the third year that it's been $8,000. It used to be $6,700. And just wanted to remind you that you do have that funding available. It doesn't carry over each year, so you use it within the period that we're in. It's funded with general fund dollars. And then just to remind you that this fund is for interns, temporary employees, professional services that your ward office would like to utilize, training and travel, and then newspaper subscriptions or dues and memberships within the community, special mailings, any victory ramp parking stamps that you may be passing or providing visitors. And then also the technology reimbursement program also comes out of your ward budgets. So that's a really high level overview. I can send out the more detailed policy after this meeting. But any questions?
The questions about this fund? I know the this word is going to seem very strange to all of us, but travel is something that in the past really chomps up this budget. If we do like an intercity leadership visit or one League of Cities visit, it really, I mean, $8,000 just doesn't go that far. I know in the past few years we've had money sometimes left over at the end of the year just because those travel, the traveling just didn't happen in the past couple of years. But so keep that in mind that that is a resource. It is for professional development, and in our council doesn't have a real professional development fund outside of this. So those trips to the League of Minnesota or to the National League of Cities and other you know, opportunities like that really are the professional development for council and for legislative aides. And you know, if there's opportunities also with just to expand and grow, that is what that funds. So we did increase it a couple years ago because we were finding that $6,700 really didn't go that far. And we'll continue to adjust that if it turns out once we're traveling again, it really doesn't cover it. But for now, that seems like a good place to be. Any other? And they don't roll over, right? Holly did say that. All right. Ms. Naker?
Thanks, Council President. I appreciate us talking about it. And Holly, I think the additional detail would be really helpful just to remind all of us. I know I've had questions in the past about hosting community meetings, what you can provide for, what you can't provide for. I know the city attorney's office has opined on, like, what's a meal and what's a snack. So things get interesting when you get into the weeds. So it's good to have us all on the same page.
Yeah, so you're sending out the full policy for us to take a look at. And I think the nice part about that, too, is that if we get a request, it's easy to say, this is the policy, this is what we can do, this is what we can't do, and be consistent. Okay. Wonderful. Thank you. So do you, should we talk?
Rolling.
Yeah, should we talk? I think Rachel's going to roll in any second, but
so we can stop if we want to. But why don't we get going on the policy session piece?
Okay, so we'll start from the beginning. So this Happy New Year, Happy 2022. We just wrapped up the budget process for this year last month, and so it's now time to start just talking about what are council's priorities in the up and coming year. What potential policy sessions would you like, organizational committee meetings or updates throughout the year? This PowerPoint presentation includes some ideas I've heard. It doesn't mean that we're moving forward with them. It's just a list and brainstorm list to start a discussion to see where there's multiple interest in different subjects. And so I will get started. So moving on to the third page, legislative. This is just a reminder that the City Council has many different services. So you're responsible for legislation and policy, constituent services, budget, and oversight and adoption. And then you also serve as the HRA, library, and public health boards. So just putting that context out there as we start thinking about your work plan for the next year. the next page. This is very rudimentary and high level, but this is how I think about the process that we're working on. So in the beginning of the year, we identify the priorities. We hear and have different policy sessions, which might drive ordinance changes or budget changes that are needed in the up and coming year. So that work is in the front half of the year. And we identify our budget priorities prior to the mayor's budget address, and so that those budget priorities can be included in his budget address if he chooses. But we're very forward thinking and proactive to make sure that he knows what the council wants to see in the up and coming budget. And then the last half of the year, we have budget committee meetings. We scour through the details of the budget and make sure those priorities that the council has are represented and fully supported within the budget before it's adopted. So next page, council priorities. This is just an opportunity to discuss if you have 2022 priorities. I've listed what 2021 was, and these might not change, but maybe we have different goals under the current, under the priorities that we had last year. Maybe we add, maybe we delete one. So I will just pause there.
And if I may, Councilmember Jalali and I chatted a little bit before this meeting about, you know, throughout the course of the circle that you've crafted, you know, there are times in meetings where we're like, we'd like to learn more about this, or let's add this to our policy agenda. And sometimes by the time we get back to our policy, kind of our setting our policy agenda, we don't want to discuss that anymore. We've learned the answers to those questions. They become part of our budget. So the list that's in front of us is really just like Holly is like she captures it all. And then we have to look at the list. And at the end of the day, like we always say, like we can do anything, but we can't do everything because we just don't have the staff capacity to do everything. And we want to make sure that the things we start, we actually can finish. So a goal here is just to figure out what are our collectively highest priorities so that we can have our staff focus their work and attention on those top priorities. Does not mean that you cannot have your own individual priorities that you're working hard on in your office and that will advance. I think these are just our collective priorities that we use our, you know, lock arm approach to move forward with in the budget process and beyond. So in no way stymieing anyone's creativity or desires to move forward and advance their own priority agendas. This is just where we come together like a chain gang. Get it done. Ms. Naker.
Thanks, Council President. One of the things I've been thinking about as we think about this, first of all, I really, really appreciate that we do this every year, and I like the trend that we've been moving towards of rather than having, you know, a policy session about a different topic every week, which kind of disappears in follow-up that are PDFs attached to emails that are hard to make it through, that we're trying to prioritize a few key things that we really want to hear about, you know, regularly in an ongoing way and try to get to a solution by the end of the year. I think that's the right way to go. As I looked at these priorities, it just occurred to me that there's a difference, I think, between what our priorities might be and what our policy sessions might need to be. Like, for example, I continue to believe that sustainable street infrastructure plan is critical. But I also feel like we've had a number of policy sessions on that topic, and I don't know if continued policy sessions on that topic is the way to address that priority. On the other hand, making sure that parking enforcement is happening citywide, I would never say is my highest value and reason for being on the council. However, it is something that I think we need to talk about and address as a council this year in policy session. So I'm not answering your question except to say that I do think I'm trying to draw that distinction in my mind between values and upper priorities and goals and what do we think we can affect change on by hearing about regularly in policy sessions in front of us.
Yeah, and sometimes policy sessions are simply to get us all on the same page with the same information. So when we do move forward to, you know, our budget or, you know, other parts of the year that we at least have the same baseline of information. I think we used to have a habit of kind of operating from what we had heard or what we knew, and this is a way to establish, like, we all know the same set of facts so that when we come to decision-making, we're on the same page. Pause. Yep. Meaningful pause here. We are going to switch tracks if our city attorney was ready to go online. But now is here in person, is ready to step up. If you need a minute to get your brain screwed on, we can give you more time.
No, I think I can pull it up.
I'm sorry. it's a long story. So I apologize for being late. I should have known better. I did know better and then forgot, but I'll tell you all the funny story when we're...
Ms. Tierney, just so you know, our motto this month is give grace. We're good.
Might I invite a friendly amendment to this year is give grace?
No, just this month. It's all...
It expires on January
1st. Right, yeah.
So we had you at the top of the order. Just to kind of tee this up a little bit, the way that our charter works is that the city council is responsible for the front end of the police chief selection process. And we were informed by current Chief Axtell last year that he intends to not seek a second term. The mayor acknowledged that. And so we asked Ms. Tierney in today to just top line talk about the process. And what is the council's role, legal role? And I think the next conversation we'll have is with HR, who supports our work in this, and understand, like, what does our timeline look like? I think there's, there's about 6 months between now and when the current chief will term comes to an end. So I think we wanted to make sure that we're not shirking our duty and responsibilities, given the, all the other things that are happening here in January. So just getting an overview from Ms. Tierney, and then, of course, we will get more follow-up information from our HR department following this kind of kickoff. So welcome, and thank you for being here.
Thank you. With regard to your specific question, which is what does notice mean, is kind of how I'm interpreting that question. Our charter doesn't define it. It just literally says upon notification. And I'm pulling up the exact language. Okay, right here. Yeah, to examine eligibles for appointment of the offices of, this applies to both police and fire, just for funsies, mm-hmm. The council upon notification from the mayor. And that phrase isn't better interpreted. When you look into the law about, what does the law say notification means? Notification is almost always used in law as a triggering event for a requirement. So once you've been notified, after you have notice of a claim, you have a certain number of years to file that claim. After you have notice of a lien, you have a certain amount of time to clear the lien, things like that. And so this is kind of the opposite, where it's the notification that gives the council the power to do something. There's one place in our code where notification is used kind of in the way it's being used in the charter, and that is in Chapter 11 of our administrative code. And in Chapter 11 of our administrative code, it's talking about the mayor's ability to remove the director of HERO. And it says the council is required to act, quote, upon receiving written official notification. So there, at least when, maybe some members of this council were there when we did this ordinance, I can't recall. But, there at least we can see that, now in this place it's requiring written official notification. So the argument being that notification in the charter then is something less. So I looked through, I Googled, did the typical deep legal research, looking for how do we know that Chief Axtell is leaving? Well, we have his announcement. I do not think that his announcement meets the notification requirement. I do think that the mayor, who acknowledged and Chief Axtell's resignation and thanked him for his service, both in Twitter and during media statements, I do think that probably satisfies the notice requirement under the charter. And so the other thing remaining, getting to the process then, the other thing remaining is for the council to establish minimum qualifications for the position. And that's what you'll need to partner with HR for.
Can you draw the distinction? So just a little bit more, backing up just a tiny bit. In the city, the fire department, the police department, and the HERO department's directors are all six-year terms. And so they run differently than the rest of the directors in the city and have different processes for appointment. What the council's role in the police chief's selection process is, upon notification, we set qualifications and establish a committee, correct? And the committee, I didn't know if it was us or the committee that set the qualifications.
You set the qualifications. So, and it's actually two prerequisites before the committee can be established. One is that notification, and then the second is established minimum qualifications. And it's after those things you establish and appoint the qualifications and examining committee.
Okay.
So notice, which we think has happened, and establishing those minimum qualifications, both of those things happen before the committee is established.
Okay. Ms. Naker.
Thanks, Council President. And Ms. Tierney, we established those qualifications by ordinance, and we already have an ordinance establishing the qualifications from last time, so we're amending that ordinance, or how does that actually work?
I don't know.
I assume we don't put them on Twitter.
Right. No, not on Twitter.
Suppose we can.
It's like notification.
Yeah, we're not really. We can. Okay. So, assuming, though, that we have the last chief's qualifications to work off, you know, as a kind of a baseline, it's not like we're inventing the wheel, but to establish any changes, improvements, tweaks, spelling, typo checks, but to those qualifications is solely the role of the council. And then we establish the committee. And, of course, these are things we can ask HR as well.
Right. I don't know. What I don't know is if there's somewhere. So I didn't research this issue of how to establish qualifications. What I don't know is whether there is somewhere else in our charter or our code that talks about how qualifications are established. And so I don't know what the exact process is that for. So I'm hesitant to guess.
Okay. That's fine. We do, in our HR department, we have, I think, two individuals who were part of the last police selection process. So I think that institutionally, and then as well as council staff, you know, we have been through this. I think we want to make sure we know, and we want to make sure the public knows, and that also that, again, we're getting started here in January so that we're ready as this moves forward. Do we have other? I guess I will just say that we have a list. Holly, I'm not sure if it's been more broadly shared, but a list of the folks that participated in the last police selection committee has a fairly robust list. I'd say there may be 30 people on it, and it was a wide range of, you know, social service organizations, youth organizations, neighborhood organizations, business organizations, law enforcement, and kind of across the board. And we will take a look at that list and determine a way to fill the seats, see if we think that the allocation is appropriate the way that it was done last time. Maybe we want to add more, you know, neighborhood. Maybe we want to add more youth. Maybe, you know, I'm not sure. But that will be one of our responsibilities in the coming weeks, is just to take a look at that and determine how we would like to accept, you know, interested parties to get seated on that committee. I don't know if it's just a broad cattle call or if each ward will make some recommendations. I think part of that will have to do with timeline and what we can manage. But when I took my first look at the list, by and large, the folks that are on the list have moved on to different roles. So I don't think that we'll see a lot of overlap between who participated last time and who will be participating this time. So there's an opportunity to really seat an interesting committee. Ms. Prince, did you have a comment or question?
No.
Okay. So we have that list, and we can share it with folks so we can start kind of gears in that direction and figure out how we want to make that announcement. And obviously, this is something that, you know, we will be working with the mayor's office on the, you know, we'll set the qualifications, we set the selection committee. The selection committee presents five candidates to the mayor. And how, you know, what happens at that point is goes on to the mayor's office. So I think we want to be coordinating schedules and timing as well on that end. So this will be something that we'll need to align with timing. But I just feel it is important that we get the ball moving on our side so that there are delays. It is not because we did not do our due diligence. Ms. Yang.
Yeah, can we get the qualifications from the last election sent to us? I'd be really interested in looking at that. And I agree, like, we don't have to reinvent the wheel. We can use that as a baseline. And then also, is it the council then that would be creating, like, the timeline on when that committee comes together, or do we have an idea of when that is going to be already?
I believe that is where HR supports our work.
Okay. Gotcha.
And establishes. I was I was thinking about, you know, participation in a selection committee like that may be dependent on what day of the week we meet and how many times we meet, because there are folks that, you know, just have very limited schedules that would be great on the committee but couldn't participate. So I think I think we should need to take those things into account and help establish that, but HR will be our partner. I think in the charter specifically says that they support our work. So
yeah, I mean, what I do recall from the last time the chief was appointed, because I was representing human resources at the time, that was a very human resources-led project under the charter, it's really the committee that guides their own work and then presents the five dames to the mayor. But obviously, a city committee can't function completely independently. So I know that human resources was very heavily involved in that work and, you know, kind of logistics and organizing.
And I don't remember all the details, but I think last time there was like one applicant that came in and they had to basically repost and encourage more people to apply because there just wasn't enough folks to have a pool of candidates. And there were some changes in qualifications. I mean, the qualification questions a lot of times are about how many years of service they've had either within the city or if it's outside of St. Paul, like maybe it's this many years in administrative or command role in St. Paul or more if you're from a different city. And so they just try to establish those baselines. But I know that they did have to basically
I remember that as well. We had fewer than five to give to the mayor.
Mm. Yeah, so they had to go shake the bushes a little bit to get people to apply. Ms. Nacker.
Thanks, Council President. I just want to say I echo your sense of urgency about making sure there's no gap between our current chief and our next chief, so I really appreciate that we're talking about this now. And kind of to that end, Ms. Tierney, I think I know the answer to this, but you said that we have to set the qualifications and then seat the committee. Does that mean that no work can happen on starting to talk about potential candidates and starting to even recruit potential candidates? Does that all have to wait until the qualifications have been set, or what is the point at which the committee is seated?
The committee is seated after qualifications. I do not think the council has the authority to create the committee until qualifications have been established. What I don't know is what does that mean. So that's the piece I'm not sure about.
Okay, great. So it sounds like our next step is to get HR in here to talk to us about our partnership in this process and setting those qualifications and getting lined up to do the committee. I think in the meantime, as I mentioned, thinking about how we want to seat that committee and folks that we think would be a good asset. I didn't mention last time there was a representative from the school board, a representative from the school district. It's a really, really great list of folks. PHA was represented. So, okay. Are there other questions for Ms. Tierney? I appreciate your coming in and talking to us about some of the high-level legal things and recognize that we have further conversations to have with our HR department to keep moving this forward. So if there aren't other questions, thank you. Thanks for coming in. Okay. We had a pause. We'll unpause on the conversation around priorities and policy.
Council President Brenroe and council members, thank you. And maybe as we're talking about priorities, maybe that's the wrong term, too. Maybe it's goals, and then we have overarching goals and objections and actions that follow, and they might look different for each scenario. So maybe it's terminology, and we can build this if we want to talk more about policy and build it backwards, or we can pause if there's anything to add right now, I guess, too. So that's a suggestion.
Okay. And this is something that in the past 3 or 4 years have started shifted. I mean, we used to very much react to the budget when it came to us, and now we try to be part of the forming of the budget so that we're on the offense line instead of defense. And it's been, you know, it's actually been great for the council. I think that we've ended up in a really good spot in the budget and make it clear to the administration what our priorities are. So it makes it, I think it's an advantage to them as well. But it doesn't mean it's perfect. And so we can change. I think that what you just said is a great point. It's like, maybe these are our overarching goals and the priorities, and then what are the steps that we're the action steps that we're taking to achieve those goals. And again, I just want to be able to finish some stuff. I feel like we ponder and move things around a lot, but it would be great to cut a ribbon on one of our policy decisions this year. So
you want to go to the next page?
Yeah.
And we can build.
Yeah, let's do that, and we'll just chime in, and then I do think that we can bring this back to the council with changes and improvements after we've had a chance to talk about it. But this is it's for all of us, so I think your input is necessary in order for us to even create a draft.
Okay, on the next page, policy session. So, again, this is a list that I heard during the budget period time of things that the council member may have been interested in learning more about or digging into more. And how I'm classifying a policy session is it's one or more work group sessions. There's a specific policy area of interest, and an outcome may be policy may change. There may be an ordinance created or change or modification. It could be a legislative priority in the legislative agenda, or there could be a budget change. So policy sessions I'm categorizing as there's an action that will come or move forward out of it that we hope. So cost of services and fees during the budget process, Councilmember Naker, specifically during the Department of Safety inspections, asked about are we collecting our costs for our services, because they were proposing to increase some of our fees. And I believe the answer was no, not completely. And so there was a request to we should maybe dig into that more citywide. I know there's also been discussions about do we have a fee process during the budget period where we adopt fees each year versus having detailed fee numbers in the ordinances themselves? So that could be kind of a two-pronged, that could be part of this too. Human resources, during the budget process, there was a request for human resources to come back and to dig into more of the contract negotiation process, how that works with our unions, the vaccine policy, their training and equity officer services. And there's also some outstanding questions on the role of how we've been using headhunters versus the HR department, like when do we use a headhunter versus them. And that wasn't necessarily – that got more into policy and procedures versus budget, so there was a request for that to come back. River Center Visitors Authority, I believe Councilmember Prince requested for – them to present on the tourism, recovery after COVID, the ramp plan. And then there was also a request to look at capital improvement budget reoccurring programs. So there's many reoccurring programs. And so there's a question asked, how is the amount determined? Is that amount used each year and needed the next year? How did these items get on the ongoing program list? So there's just some questions about that. And then there's also been discussion about moving to a two-year budget cycle. So that is on the list as well. So again, we can add, we can scratch off, we can move this around. So.
Thanks, Council President. So I would add, I think some of these things might be able to be answered in different ways from policy sessions. For example, as I was just looking at cost of services and fees charged, it's really important to me that we be covering our costs at a minimum. But I think that that potentially could become a budget question that we ask in our budget presentations from departments. You know, are our fees covering our costs? And if not, what's your plan to increase these over time to get there? Something like that. So I don't know if we need to sit here and have people be like, yes, it does, no, it doesn't. That might be true for others of these as well. But
can I just say, I feel like, sorry to interrupt you, but on that particular item, I feel like we have said it repeatedly. And so I think having it as a budget question is a great idea, because it's like, you know that this is what we want to do, and I think you do too. So it forces the work as part of the budget. So I think I agree, like this one in particular, they know exactly what we think about this.
Right. So two things I would add that aren't here. One is, as I mentioned, I think parking enforcement is just something that has come up again and again in my ward. I think I'm not alone on that. It's a accessibility issue when people are parking in handicapped spaces. It's a quality of life issue when there are semis parked on residential streets. It's a pedestrian safety issue when people can't see around the sun. So it's really, really important that we get a handle on that. And I've gotten conflicting information about what is going on with that in general. So that's potentially more than one session, depending on hearing the problem, identifying solutions, whatever. And the other one is just public safety, and that is listed under other things here. I know we get community first public safety updates, but there's a lot that goes into public safety beyond the community first public safety initiative. There's the violence reduction work group that County Attorney Choi is convening. There's obviously our new Office of Neighborhood Safety. So it feels like, and public safety is something I know I get asked about all the time. It's top of mind for constituents. So some sort of public safety that isn't just community first public safety, I think, is maybe policy session worthy.
And is that, I agree. And I think one of the hopes that we had with the Office of Neighborhood Safety is that they would sort of provide the role of the conductor of the orchestra so we could get a regular update like we get from public health. Mm-hmm. That's, you know, at a monthly meeting that says, here's what's going on with, you know, the work we're doing in the fire department. Here's what's going on in the police department. Here's what's going on with the group that Choi's working on. And, like, gives us all, I mean, I think that what we've noticed is there's a lot of work going on, but it's pretty siloed. And it is coming together. I think, you know, you can tell with Healing Streets, with our unsheltered homeless initiatives. My hope was that the Office of Neighborhood Safety would step up and take that role.
Yeah.
And I know that we hurried money out the door to get that position hired last year, and it was not, they did not get it, a person in that role. So I'm hoping for good news on that soon. But is that, do you think, like, something like a, like we've been doing with a public health update, having a Office of Neighborhood Safety monthly would accommodate that versus a more of a policy session?
Yeah, I think that'd be great. And it also shows that the council is paying attention to the issue, which I often hear, you know, the council doesn't even care about this.
If I could, I love that idea, because if you recall, at our last update on the Community First Public Safety, the deputy mayor did say, why is the police department not here? Also making their report to the council. So I think it's really a great idea to say that the Office of Neighborhood Safety, I love that idea of, you know, is kind of the clearinghouse for what's happening in all our areas and how we're coordinating. And the addition of the care program to the fire department being part of that, I think, is appropriate. So I think that's a great idea if we went to a once a month report at the council.
I think that'd be great. And also, I'm thinking about our Community First grants that we did last year, and, like, how do we know where we went with those? You know, like, some of the programs we heard about last month, to me, had real clear signs of being a match with Healing Streets or with some of our youth work. And, you know, like, could we incorporate those into the work that we're doing? So understanding that the work that we're initiating finds a place to land and thrive. So I think that's part of that conversation, too. Ms. Yang?
Thank you. I have another policy session I add to the list here, too, and this is something I've, like, bounced around with some of the council members already, too, and I receive a lot of input from our district councils and the ones in my area, along with businesses, about how they'd like to see DSI services and the system overall be more convenient for them and also, like, user-friendly as well. So what I'm talking about here specifically would be, like, our system around license renewals. Some folks, they have to renew, like, their license for an occupation year after year, and they're like, why can't we do this, you know, every 2 years or 3 years? What's the use of having it be an annual renewal? It's costly for us. And when I talked to Director Cervantes about it, he's also mentioned about how much workload our staff also have too, and, like, right now everything is paperwork too, and it's not mm-hmm. like electronic. And so I really like to have us take a look at that and have a deeper conversation with DSI about it. And I do agree, like, spaces like this where we can really accelerate the work and make sure there's next steps to it as well.
Ms. Anker?
Thanks, Council President. I really support that, Councilmember Yang, and I also think we're going to be having a final report from our audit committee consultant soon on constituent and customer service, and I think it would be really interesting when we read that report, which discovered a lot of things related to DSI and lots of other departments. Some of that, those findings could potentially be wrapped into a discussion of DSI service, so I think that would be great. And then the other thing that I noticed in some of our other, they're all kind of in different categories here, but this idea of hearing updates on new programs and initiatives that we've started and kind of checking back on them. I don't know if that's policy session per se or if that's council presentation, but I do think there are so many of these, whether it's free rec programs in parks that, you know, we've specifically funded and waived fees, or if it's the Ethos program, or a lot of our housing programs that we called for in our resolution, just reminding ourselves that they're happening and hearing about their progress, which also shows departments that we care about them, I think might be another good use of our time.
Yeah, and my hopes with our, I believe this is loosely established, but I would like to have a much more formalized annual calendar of when those updates are occurring. I know that following the resolution on the environmental resolution this week, it's like, when is the Climate Action Resiliency Plan come back and report to us? And, you know, knowing that they come every year on Earth Day or around Earth Day to present to us, I think having that calendar where we have expectations, you know, this is the month where we get the update on inspiring communities. This is the month where we get the update on some of the Office of Financial Empowerment programs. This is where we get our update on the 30% AMI funds from ARPA. Is like just where we know that, oh, it's November, so we must be getting the blah-de-de-blah. Would be great, because I do feel like what happens a lot of times is we call for the reports as opposed to just having them show up. So I think that that's a council director role, and we will make sure that gets assigned. But I think some of these things are just annual check-ins so that we know stuff got off the ground or if it needs some attention or, as Ms. Yang just said, acceleration. They need a little kick in the pants. We can do that here, too. Or just some hugs, you know. But I do think having those things as a part of a calendar and as expected reports, it would be really helpful, because I do think that there's things that we just don't follow up on. I want to underscore the parking enforcement question. It is car storage at its worst, and I do feel like we were just about to have this conversation before COVID. I have a call in to the commander that oversees that to figure out what's the delay, and so we can get that information to us. But we also have problems with dumped cars that get left and not picked up. We have problems with scoff laws, and we also have issues, I've heard, with case law that makes it difficult to enforce laws we have on the books. And so if we have laws that are on books that are unenforceable, I think we need to address those and figure out what those problems are. And also just I agree about the semi-trucks and trailers that are parked on residential streets. I've said it before, but, as businesses move to a virtual model or private contractor model, they do not have bricks and mortar businesses in our community that are paying taxes that support the infrastructure. And we're seeing trucking moving to a more contractor basis. There's not a place for people to park their trucks in the evening, so they park them all over the city. And unfortunately, those are on residential streets that are not designed for semis. They, as Ms. Naker said, they block the view shed. People are staying in them, hanging out in them, leaving trash and other items. And I know that in Minneapolis they talked about, do we need some places where trucks can park for a fee, or should we register trucks in the city? I've been out, riding around a few times and seeing, like, the trucks are from everywhere. They're from Texas. They're from Tennessee. You know, and I don't know if the driver's here or they're dropping here or what have you, but, semi-trucks aren't the kind of thing that we can just throw a tow truck on and drag them away, though the sight of that would be something to see. But just kind of trying to figure out how do we solve that problem because it is, there are certain places where the rows of semis and with payloads on them is astounding, and it's very, very difficult for our roads, wear and tear, and it's hard to plow around, and it's hard to sweep around, and it's hard to do street maintenance around. So understanding how we can support enforcement there. And then you mentioned this too with the human resources. I would like a check-in with procurement and human resources. I feel that we have, I know that hiring is a very significant challenge for everybody across the land, maybe across the globe these days. So to understand the challenges there, but we also did talk, and it's on the list about, you know, if we're doing several executive searches in the course of a year, do we want to continue to do individual contracts with headhunters, or would it make more sense to do a retainer with one of those organizations? I think they do very good work, but, you know, on an individual basis, we're paying probably a significant more amount of money for each individual search than we would if we had somebody on a retainer. So some of those questions and understanding, like, how we're adapting with technology and with the changes in the employment environment would be, I think, an important policy session and tee us up for a good budget conversation around HR in the fall. Ms. Prince and then Ms. Jalali.
Thank you. And I would agree with the points that you just made about parking enforcement and human resources. I'm glad to see that the River Center Visitors Authority is on this list. I think that in terms of there are three council members on that board, which is significant, but I think what is important for the council to hear is how this facility has been impacted by the pandemic and all the ways in which they have worked to continue to be effective, to find uses for the building. I mean, having COVID testing, having it be a COVID test site has been a really important way of funding the Wilkins Auditorium during the pandemic. Also now, of course, the Wild are back and things are happening at River Center, so that's great to see. But I spoke to Terry Mattson this morning, and he said he would very much welcome the opportunity to come in and give a full update. The other thing I think council members may not know, I've probably mentioned this, but in the 90s, the city decided that the River Center ramp wouldn't be part of the rest of our parking and parking fund. What do we call it? The parking and something. Anyway, that it's not part of our parking fund, and that the funding from the River Center ramp would go to support, to pay for the operations of River Center. So that's why we're in this dilemma with the River Center ramp. We have not been maintaining it adequately. And when it isn't bringing in money during the pandemic, it significantly reduces the operations budget of River Center. So all in all, I think it's such a complex number of issues along with the pandemic that I think we'd really benefit from hearing from them. I'm also pleased to see Section 3 is on this. Section 3 is a federal program that requires that when the city is spending federal money, that the various recipients of the money are hiring from the local community, and that they are hiring individuals for jobs that become available, as well as contracting with local businesses. And Section 3, for whatever reason, throughout the United States is kind of like this forgotten program. And it's not clear to me why the federal enforcement of it isn't stronger. But in any event, with the federal infrastructure dollars and with the ARPA funds, it really, for all of us representing people in our communities, that means jobs for our local businesses and individuals who are would have those opportunities to have living wage jobs. So I think it would be really useful and important. I've been in contact with Councilmember Naker and Councilmember Tao about meeting with some local community members who would really like us to be taking a harder look at Section 3. So I appreciate that that's on there, and I hope it will continue to stay on there. The only other thing I might add, and this may not need to be a policy session, but I just want to call our attention to it, is the Great River Passage is moving forward in a number of key ways. One is that the River Classroom is in our bonding bill, as is River's Edge, which is the river balcony. There's some progress. It looks like the MPCA is looking at, there's an article in today's paper, but we're getting some encouragement to seek funding to clean up Pig's Eye. And so I just like to kind of keep that as something that we're keeping an eye on. It may not require a policy session, but there's some very positive movement happening all along the river in the city. And Mary DeLay is doing some good work fundraising and building a constituency for those projects. So just kind of keeping that as a potential policy session or a report to City Council. But otherwise, I think this is evolving as a good and important list for us to stay on top of the things that we need to check in on. And I also am very excited that that our new director will be starting at the end of this month, because I do think that Ms. Howes will be able to help us really coordinate this work that has had to be coordinated by our leadership team, in addition to all the other work that you have to do for your awards. So I think we're going to see some important leadership from that office, and I'm very excited about it.
And on the River Center Visitors Authority, I, as you were talking, I thought, you know, it might be a nice adjustment to have a River Center come in the spring, pre-budget, because I do feel like a lot of times when we, by the time, I know Ms. Yang knows this, but by the time we hear the water utilities budget at the council meeting, it's like the 28th time we've heard the budget, because they're like, dot the I's, cross the T's, do it again, and do it again. It's a lot on that end, but to hear early, what are the challenges? Because, like, one of the questions I would have is, yes, you haven't had parking revenue, and you've had, you know, you haven't been filling up the River Center, but that also must mean that your labor costs are lower.
Right.
So, like, what does that balance sheet look like? Obviously, it's not equal, but what does that look like? You know, I've wondered that about when the schools were closed. You know, where were the savings? Where were they eaten up? But I think with River Center, understanding that before we go into budget is probably more beneficial than having them come and repeat the budget that they presented to their committee at the end of the year, in terms of our ability to do something proactive about it. So I like that.
And if I could just respond to that, they've had a large staff reduction as a result of the pandemic. The other thing, though, is that with all the uncertainties, as we know well, you know, coming back to work on January 3rd, and having pushed off that date several times, they need to be ready to hit the ground running to fill those meeting times that may become available, which they don't know whether they're going to become available. So they're looking at all these trends. They're following what other cities are doing. They're trying to stay in touch with all the organizations that hold meetings. And so it really is a particularly unique challenge that they face on how to staff up when, because nobody thought this would last for 2 years. So,
and they may have an advantage given they have such a large space. I mean, meetings that maybe previously were held in smaller rooms might want to move to bigger rooms for now, and so I'm assuming that they're also thinking, like, how do we take advantage of the space? And so I think it'd be great to hear from them as well. Ms. Dulally.
Thanks. I've just been absorbing and kind of wrapping my head around this because sometimes it just feels like thinking about everything at once is exciting and overwhelming. I guess I would add in that to lift up the Community First public safety updates, I would really echo what Council President Brad Mullen said, that I think the vision behind hiring on an Office of Neighborhood Safety Director was that they would become the missing link. They would become the coordinator. They would be identifying the connections between things. They would be giving reports to the administration and back to the council. They would be like a place where the community can go to inform the vision. And so I know that process is underway and that they're currently hiring for that, but I would just reiterate my eagerness to support that institutional build out. I think that's huge. The other reason why I think that's really valuable and why tracking the ONS development this year is important is that the commission of the Citizens League that I served on had so much community input and nuance that is really about how the community wants these programs to feel. And the top line of that process was we got a set of budget recommendations and we overwhelmingly acted on it. And that's great. That's huge. And that's doing something with the recommendations. And there's also a lot of implementation, just quality feedback in that report that the community put together with the Citizens League that I think the more regularly we're talking about it, the more it's kind of in our minds as policymakers. And, you know, I'll always remember one of the most powerful exercises that we did in that Citizens League process was we were asked to imagine, like, if this type of responder came to you or someone you love in crisis, how would you want that interaction to feel? What skill sets would you want them to have? What are some of the, you know, training and mindsets you'd want them to have? And I just really think stuff like that is, that's the point of it all, is that people are getting the help they need and that we are making better choices with our resources. And sometimes I think I get in the space of, well, we passed the budget and, like, on to the next thing. And actually I have a lot of investment and care, and I know this council does, in, like, seeing that work through as really important and nationally significant. So I'm just basically adding my affirmation to that point I'm hearing really clearly. I personally would really love to hear from the Climate Justice Advisory Board, which is another really good community structure that's really representative of our city. And I think that could be a place where we kind of link different plans together. Like, I'm thinking of our sort of sustainable street infrastructure priority and then the role that the Climate Advisory Board has in sort of advising on our climate, on the CARP, the Climate Action Plan, in an ongoing way. You know, we have the Department of Public Works recently completed or is wrapping up a big review of the bike plan and did a bunch of community engagement around that. And so I would like to get these updates because I feel like the report backs getting more connected more clearly would just create that reinforcement that I think helps solidify our choices and advance the things that we know are important to meeting the goals of just more sustainable, people-centered infrastructure that is better for the environment. So that's just another one I wanted to re-up. And then I wanted to call attention to, and I think it could sort of fit into the climate framework, but I and Councilmember Tao serve on the Policy Leadership Committee for Rethinking I-94, which is a big engagement process underway with Minnesota Department of Transportation right now. And we've been in the Rethinking I-94 conversation along with state electeds, constituents who represent communities living along the freeway, you know, county commissioners are in that conversation, state legislators, and then lots and lots of community organizations. And this council passed a resolution that was in tandem with the city of Minneapolis's resolution around the sort of priorities for the 94 project and, like, the rethinking process. And similar to the theme of, like, we put all this work in and then we just kind of put it out there, and how do we sort of make sure that we're ushering it along well. I would like to get a report back sometime to the Fuller Council on that and figure out the best way to share where it's at now, because a couple of key things that happened recently, for example, are that one, going out on, before we went out on the holidays, there was one last engagement session with MnDOT where the community had been pretty vocal that they really wanted more from this process than what they were getting in terms of a sort of climate-oriented vision, thinking about, you know, transit investments and sort of not falling into the same mistakes that made 94 such a problem for our communities in the first place. And I appreciate that MnDOT and Commissioner Anderson Kelleher were very responsive to that, and they said we are going to kind of, basically they said we will back up and we're going to update our project scope and documents to better reflect what we're hearing, and I think that's, like, really important, especially when you're dealing with a huge state agency and, like, dealing with kind of the you know, that's not just a city conversation, even though the cities are, like, bearing the brunt of the freeway. It's, like, all the stakeholders along the statewide interstate system. So that was important, and it had come on, like, months of work. And then now the commissioner is actually transitioning, and I think she's going to go serve the city of Minneapolis as their public works director. But, you know, that's a huge multi-city project, and then it also is coming with an agency transition, and our communities are still going to be here experiencing that. So I think that's a thing that I'm a part of, that it connects back to the street stuff, it connects back to climate, and I just think it would benefit the council at some point to kind of get something back here. And, you know, it's not just me and Councilmember Tao, it's Russ Stark is there, like some of, you know, our public works staff are in that conversation. So that is just something I wanted to share here as we're talking about kind of citywide initiatives and how it fits in. I think that at some point things like that where I'm a part of it and can bring that back to this group, I think would benefit the council, especially since we had, I thought, a really great resolution that was community informed that our full council passed that said, you know, this is our expectation as a city. So would love the weight of my colleagues for our community behind that again. And those are just some of the things I wanted to add in as we're talking about all this.
And I think that's a great summary, and I was just thinking about the article in the paper today about Duluth looking at 35W and how, like, to your point about it being really a larger conversation. I hope that in our org committee check-ins, not only can we share with each other what's happening in the commissions and committees we sit on, but also I know Ms. Yang has been our representative on Hillcrest, and I think that we look to her to determine when we need to hear a report back to the full council in terms of, like, where is that point, you know, where are that point or those points where it's important to get us all on board. And so I mean, even using the org committee as a place to vet that, I think is a good process. And the other thing I just wanted to say is Ms. Prince often points to our fair housing blueprint, our plan that we established several years ago in with stakeholders and our community, and really put forth a plan of action that when you look back at the plan, we're continuing to check the list of things that we said we were going to set out to do. And I think any time that we can make that structure, I mean, the bike plan is a similar document where we can go back and check off what's happened and how much progress we've made and where we are too slow in moving forward and where we've really had a lot of successes. And I also think maybe identifying places where we don't really have that checklist and figuring out how to get one really helps hold us accountable. And so as you're mentioning that, it's like, are these places, like especially community first public safety, where we did a resolution, but maybe we need a little bit more, and this could be the Office of Neighborhood Safety, but a little bit more of an accountability where it's like, here are the 13 things that we want to accomplish so that we can keep going back and knowing in the middle of the fray that we actually are making advances, because I think we have made huge advances in housing because of our plan. So trying to use that model on other things. Ms. Nanker.
Thanks, Council President. And yeah, two thoughts. One is just on that theme of using these. It's funny listening to everyone talk how many different purposes there are for policy sessions. You know, there's letting everyone know that we're aware of this issue and working on it. There's putting the foot on the gas and accelerating things. There's also just this kind of helping, I think, people in the public tie together these many different strands that are all working on one issue. And I'm glad that you said housing, Council President, because I was just thinking, obviously, I know affordable housing and homelessness is something all of us are very focused on. And right now we have it broken up into a bunch of different kinds of reports, ARP housing. We have our housing trust fund updates that happen at HRA, that kind of thing. And I wonder if maybe, just like ONS, we could consider having a housing and homelessness update. Maybe it's led by Heading Home Ramsey, which is the overarching collaborative of all of our county, city, nonprofits, et cetera. But that would be, again, another update that is similar to public safety with outcomes, with numbers of people housed and homeless and the different how are all of our efforts tie in. Because I think that's just one more area where people don't see all that is going on and where
frankly, I think accountability is also really important. The last thing I want to say is I know part of this is not just adding to the list, but also taking away from the list, because that's how we get to priorities. So I will say for myself, looking at this list, I think everyone here knows very well that I think we should be on a two-year budget process. I think it's more efficient. I think it's a better use of staff time. It works smarter, not harder. And it allows us the time to actually have programs get off the ground before we're evaluating them and then deciding whether to budget for them again 2 months later. However, I just don't know that our locus of control is there. I don't think we have the authority to do that. And I don't want to spend my time and political capital pushing that ball up the hill. I think if the mayor were interested and wanted to go for that, we can. That's great. But I don't know that a policy session is going to achieve it, and it's a ton of work. So I'm willing to take that one off the list.
I love it, though.
I do. I love it.
Yeah. We've talked about this quite a bit, especially for, like, when you think about public works, being able to have a two-year budget. Seems like it would span a couple seasons. So if we had a snowy one, it would kind of help balance out the ones where it doesn't snow that much. And I know Ramsey County does the two-year budget as well. But I do agree. I think it is important to do where we have put the effort and energy behind areas where we have control. And I do know that similarly, the mayor is interested in the two-year budget, but also it's not on the top of their list. And so it could just be one of those soon, someday, the support is there. But I would agree that we probably don't have, the juice would not be worth the squeeze in that one.
I'm going to steal that phrase with you.
I also just, I think FYI, I asked Ms. Naker to put her energy into wrangling some of the ARPA collaboration that we have been requesting from the mayor's office. And I know that they're continuing to work in small work groups that we've gotten some updates, but generally not been participants in. And just to kind of go to really navigate our role in that, what we don't want to do is end up in a situation where we just vote up, down, on items that come to us, as opposed to helping frame the strategies. And I know folks have had conversations with Ms. Becker, with Ms. Prosser, you know, talking about Right Track and jobs. And I think all that stuff is very exciting. But we're looking. We have a huge influx of dollars at the city right now, in addition to ARPA infrastructure money, the Build Back Better money, budget surplus at the state, and making sure that we are all hands on deck and using our council offices to help frame those conversations. So Ms. Naker will be reporting back on that at org committee as well. But I just feel like we're in good hands. She's got the tenacity required to do that. So we put her on it. But I think, and then having kind of our check back, and obviously in between as well, but we do want to, you know, that message has been sent, that message has been received, and yet we've still... I've had far too little conversation as far as the strategic plan around ARPA. I do see a lot of these as check-ins that we just need to get on a regular basis as well. If we have more items or less items, things we'd like to take off, I think just continuing to share these with Ms. Houston, we'll keep working on this document and separate out what's a policy session, what is a check-in, what is a regular check-in, what are things we just want to send an email and get an answer to? And what are the things we want to dig into this year? And I really appreciate this distinction in the beginning of our conversation, establishing what our council budget priorities are, what our values and priorities are, and then just what some of our burning questions are different things. So we'll make sure we get those in appropriate buckets. Was there more on this topic today?
Council President Brenmo and council members, no. I will put this information into a one-page document that then can be edited and continue to evolve over time.
All right. Thanks for continuing to catch the fly balls as we're in these meetings and, you know, throwing out things we'd like to know more about or what we'd want to follow up on. And we appreciate that. And we will do our part in helping skinny down the list and figuring out where we want to put our energy in this year. All right. So that's good. So then the only other thing we have, and this can be as robust or as minimal as we want, the update on committees, boards, activities, and other. And I know Ms. Houston sent a list of our budget roles and assignments. Is it in this PowerPoint, too, or a separate?
It's a separate attachment.
I've got, there's, I for some reason have today's agenda with me, too, so that's getting mixed into the, but if there are things on the list that you are not on, let Holly know. If there's things on the list that we should identify, let Holly know. I think that the only real change we made very recently was I joined the Ramsey County Dispatch Board. Other than that, I don't think we've had big shifts. Oh, congratulations. Ms. Yang was elected vice president of the Water Board again last night. So her private company car should be here any minute. but anyway, so take a look at that, and we will. I got little feedback that people do not like to be called out on the particular committees at the org committee meeting. So if you just want to, before we have org committee, we'll send this out just to remind you, like, which things. And sometimes there's not a report for that month. But again, I think this is a great place to check in on what we're hearing and also to determine, you know what, it's time to come before the full council and get an update that's for us and for the public on any of these items. They ebb and flow. So, Ms. Jalali.
So are we proposing that we all report back more at org committee during the standing section, or would it be, if it's bigger than that, we try to get it as its own session, or is that kind of the working?
I think just plan to report back on any relevant board, committee updates. Like, I do not have something to share from the League of Minnesota Cities this month. But if we do... and then if it's a big thing, I think that we can even just forego the org committee process and bring it to the council, or do both.
Yeah.
And just a tiny bit of background on this. And this is an amazing list of things where we sit as council members, and really when we're at those boards and commissions, we're representing St. Paul in the city council. And I think there was a time where we were like, I don't know what's going on at those other committees, and also I don't know how that council member is representing us at that board. And so when they reported to us, we had an opportunity to be like, actually, I'm supportive of that, and to have some dialogue. So it's a good opportunity to make sure that we're square. Obviously, some of these are very ward-specific or focus area-specific, but just it's just a huge – there's a lot of responsibility that you see on a list like this, and so just making sure that we have a chance to check in with each other so we know what's happening across the metro, and, this includes rail and some county representation, housing and water, so it's pretty broad. So we'll do that. Ms. Jalali.
I would say as a update to one of my existing ones, so I took over for Councilmember Tolbert, and we basically switched places on the tab. So he was the primary and I was the alternate, and now I'm the primary and he's the alternate. And so we're representing St. Paul at the Met Council Transportation Advisory Board. And actually also I am going to be on the Executive Leadership Committee now to help set the course for that and be able to drive that a little more, and I think that's exciting going into this year because we are also getting an influx of federal funds for transportation through a whole range of different bills, and that has been a whole process of just working with Met Council to figure out where do the allocations go, how do we set scores for allocations, how does that connect back to the city, and, our Public Works leadership tracks those meetings, and we usually have someone from Public Works there, and I think that's another area where I can play a role in bringing that back to this group and sharing, here's what we're hearing about funds for infrastructure and things like that. So I guess I'm naming that to say, one, I'm excited about that. Two, I'll make a little New Year's resolution to be more proactive in the report backs. I think most of my boards to this point have been a lot more just participate, and there's not as much stuff on the horizon all the time, or whatever I was part of, like the Citizens League, became very actionable and we acted on it. But I think as I look ahead to my assignments, that's where I anticipate sharing with this group more, and I'm looking forward to that. So
I lost track of what happened with Ramsey County Criminal Justice Coordinating Council. Are they still meeting, or did that group disband? Ms. Nanker?
It is meeting, Council President. You might notice crossed it off of mine because I withdrew from it, but I thought that they had potentially been talking, Ms. Jolly, to you or to maybe someone else on the council about joining, but I don't know where that landed.
I believe we were We were discussing, myself and Ms. Yang, surveying, but we had to arrive at a decision and check with some other pieces with the county first. So that is something we hope to update. But
okay.
That is still in the mix. Yep.
And I know that there, the Community Justice Coordinating Council was doing some very specific work around bail bond reform and warrant clearance. Like there were 5,000 outstanding warrants, and they were trying to just, some of them were for very small things and like causing people problems all over the place, so trying to clear those out. And it was kind of projecting, and it was challenging as council members to figure out like how we fit into that. And then I know Ms. Commissioner Carter was reflecting that maybe some of the work that the violence reduction group is working on maybe could step into the role that some of that CJCC was doing. So there could be some like resettling of like what are those different committees doing and who's at the table. And I think there are different parties at both of those groups, you know, public defenders or Project Remand or are part of the Criminal Justice Coordinating Council, but not the other. So it might be worth checking in with Commissioner Carter too, in terms of like, what is the future of that committee look like and what will its work be, to help understand if it's evolving at this time too. So that was one.
Okay.
Report, Ms. Prince.
I'm happy to report on a few things. The goal line is getting really close to a construction start. We're waiting on final federal approval, so we don't have a date, but it will be in 2022. It was hopeful that construction might start this year, but it's not predictable yet. On the dispatch board, it's great that Council Member Joe Alley and Council President Brenmoen will be joining me on that, and they are in the process of adapting their responses to the new, both the police COAST program and the fire department's CARE program. So that's exciting. The reparations committee is starting to gel. I was really pleased that they, the conveners of the committee were able to meet with the leadership team. I heard good reports. I don't know if any of you want to jump in there, but I believe that the committee is really starting to gel. They're really clear that they are drafting an ordinance, and they are hoping to do some kind of community outreach once they have a draft ordinance. CAPRW, Community Action Partnership of Ramsey and Washington County, has an opening for executive director, so if you know anybody who would be good, send them that way. But one of the exciting things there is that in our most recent strategic plan, which we're just in the process of completing, CAPRW is planning to work much more directly with community partners. And I had arranged a meeting between Director Karcher-Ramos from the Office of Financial Empowerment and our outgoing Executive Director Catherine Fair at CAPRW. And they saw huge numbers of ways in which they can be working together. Because the amazing thing about CAPRW is they are currently working with 2 out of 3 people who are living in poverty in Ramsey and Washington County. So it is definitely the agency to work with to be able to make direct connections to our families living in poverty. The Great River Rail, we did get our $10 million match out of the 2021 legislative session, so the work is beginning on the second daily train, and the committee is going to be adapting its role to marketing and outreach to figure out the ways that our cities and colleges and universities and everyone can more directly market the rail option as the most climate-friendly of transportation options. I just joined the Twin Cities Land Bank Board. I'm excited about that for the potential that that gives the businesses and nonprofits in our wards to be able to use land bank resources to purchase, to be able to own their own buildings. So this is it's a great board. It's a great resource for us. And to your point about the Ramsey County Criminal Justice Coordinating Council, I am on the Juvenile Detention Alternatives Initiative Stakeholder Group, and we have not had a meeting for months. So I'm not, maybe they're looking at doing some things differently, but I think it'll be good to catch up with the work that's happening with the Violent Crime Coordinating, Violence Reduction Leadership Group. So maybe that will help to supplant some of that other work. But anyway, and then our audit committee. I will report for Ms. Naker and I that our first audit has been completed, the customer service constituent response report, and it is very deep and wide and thorough, and so we are in the process of making our final edits this week, and it will be presented to the council on January 26th is that the date, I believe, but later this month. So a lot of progress.
Can I just chime in on that, Council President? Just to follow up on that, it is really exciting, and I know that reading 73-plus page reports isn't everyone's idea of a good time, but I will tell you, the report is extremely well-written. They went into detail on each department in the city's internal narratives about how they work and the external narratives from the public about how they work, and it's just fascinating to see, and the recommendations that they've made are not, you know, far-reaching, high-level, could never get there. Some of them are very concrete, and all of us could even be doing them tomorrow. So I would really encourage you to give it a look when we send it out, and then we'll have a presentation. But excited about it.
Yeah, it's great.
And I'll be at the full council 30 on the 26th.
If that's okay.
Yeah. Other updates? Great. We've covered a lot of ground today.
Okay, wonderful. Well, I think that brings us to the end, unless there's... usually we put other on. We've got to remember to do that in case something else comes up, and then we don't get in trouble for talking about other. But we have HRA today at 2:30, chaired by Ms. Naker. 2:30? 2, I lied.
2 o'clock. Okay. In 2022, we're doing it at 2 o'clock.
Okay. Wait, what?
And then council at 3:30. And so there's nothing else to come before us. We are adjourned.